bird. Welcome to the Friskies Express. Please keep all paws and tails inside the train. To the right, you'll see Crunch Canyon. To your left is Filet Falls. Now you're passing Party Mix Peak. Today's delicioso tour is almost over. But don't worry. With Friskies, there's always more to explore. Check out Friskies.com to explore more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Dark is over, but here in post-show recaps, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course, I'm not alone. I'm joined the lights to my shadow. Rich, how you doing?
I'm so good, Grace. I'm glad that I get to be the light to your shadow. I tend to be the shadow to most people's light on these podcasts, so I'll take it.
But actually, it was the triquetra all along. Ariel's here. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm still laughing about Adam.
Damn.
Ah, damn. Damn.
It's a good bit that unfortunately shows up in the very last episode of the show.
Yeah. Triquetra?
Yeah. F, man. Damn. Yeah. Very fun. Very
incredible.
Fun. We've done it. We did it. We talked about Dark every single episode. As Steve Kerrigan would say, you did it. And folks, listen along with us. We very much appreciate it. We're here today just to have a combo. We did get one piece of feedback that I'm delighted in the person who sent it in. I'll have to double check. Fiona sent in a great piece of feedback. I'm really excited to dive in with you. It should take us like 45 minutes just to dissect it all. That's a joke. But Rich, how are you feeling? We watched every episode of Dark.
I am really proud of us for watching every episode of Dark and taking it apart so insightfully. I am really sad that there's no more Dark to watch, Grace. I was telling you in our pre-pro meeting there that I rewatched 1899 between last week and this week as I knew we were sitting down. And I wanted just to revisit these guys' stuff. And as much as we were obviously on it when we talked about 1899, there's just so much connective tissue. Yeah. I feel even more robbed than I did when it was not picked up last fall, but I it was an absolute joy to get to talk through this series with both of you over the last couple of months.
How about you, Ariel? How you feeling?
It's rough out here. I gotta be honest. With these in these darkless streets. That's funny. I love that point about the 1899 because I can't help but feel, I randomly happened to be thinking about it the other day. I mean, obviously we talk about Dark every week, so it's not that random, but it's just, actually, you know what it was? It was Zelda. There was this thing in the Zelda game that I'm playing that looked just like the pyramid in 1899. I was
sure.
This is so cool. I wish we had gotten to see more of that show. This has been, I mean, I already said it last episode, this has been such a delight, and it's going to be fun and sad, I think, to look back and at everything, not just at the show, but like everything that we got to talk about that I feel so fortunate to get into this more meaty stuff that we were able to through this rewatch with spoilers and wonder and ask each other questions. I think that's ridiculous and wonderful. Like, wait, I don't know what that actually meant. Can someone else explain that to me? As we always said, a show that on multiple rewatches still doesn't lose its edge and its effect. And I'm sure there'll be things in another year. Who am I kidding? 6 months when I rewatch it, I'm sure there'll be things that I still will only just be realizing.
Part of the thing I realized as we were doing our coverage is how much fun I was having pushing friends that I have that have not yet watched the show to jump on board as we were doing the rewatch podcast, and just getting to like watch an episode every week, linger on it, dissect it in that way. It just left me so kind of fixate on it over the past few months. And I really find myself with all of these other time travel properties, like you mentioned Zelda, but anything else time travel related that I look to is influenced after having watched Dark. And it's so hard because I don't want to reveal to people, watch Dark, it's the best time travel story that there is. I want to let them have that organic discovery in episode one. But as we came to the end of our podcast coverage, and I had a couple of stragglers that had yet resisted my subtle charms over the months, I just had to browbeat them finally, Ariel. It's the best time travel story there is. It's the best.
Is that what you want me to say? I love it.
Yeah, the 1899 thing is really fun because I don't know that I'm ready to revisit it only because it got canceled and it makes me very sad. I'm not sure how you felt like getting through it and then feeling like, damn it, like the no answer. I mean, I do think to a degree, I wonder if you agree. I feel like being removed from it, the ending actually like is like best case scenario for a show that gets canceled, that like it can feel self-contained to a degree. I won't spoil it because I, you know, come into the Dark pod and we presume most people have watched 1899, but if you hadn't, do you folks know that that Baron and Yante's next project is rumored in the world? Did you know that there's information out there about this, that they have a project upcoming on Netflix? Did you know this?
I am aware that there are rumors.
Yeah.
I heard about like a deal, but I'm shocked that it was on Netflix after the 1899 of it. But
so I think that their deal came before 1899. And actually 1899 was actually written before Dark. Actually, that was their first idea. And then they did Dark for Netflix, and they then signed on to a deal with Netflix. And although that's canceled, there is potentially a miniseries in the work called Till, which is based off a 2017 German novel about a juggler, historical juggler during the Germany 30 Years War. I have to imagine it's more complicated than that, but I've not read the book.
Juggling three things.
Yeah, probably. So it is. I do have that feeling of like, wow, that's very exciting. I think the plan will be to fill this feed with some content, but I know that that's like the thing I'm like waiting for. And I don't know. I presume that they would not be subject to, depends on where they film, that they would not be subject to this, the strike, either the writer's strike or the actor strike, unless they want to use SAG actors and, or if they want to be in solidarity with the strike happening. But there's a chance. I know that like South Korean dramas on Netflix are still in the works. I'm totally placing us in time here, but it's very exciting to think that like, maybe they're already working away at something else, something new.
The international components of the strike make it very fascinating to wonder about. I'm sure that
we're going to be in business, Rich, over the.
I know. I'm here for it. I'm sure that they're morally and ethically in solidarity with their cohorts here in the U.S., but nonetheless, that's entertaining. So I had heard of a different rumor, and I don't know how much veracity there is to this a couple of months out, but I back in February-ish of 2023, I had read that they were involved in an adaptation of a comic book property called Something is Killing the Children, which feels very in their wheel space, in the same way that I've talked a lot about Tales from the Loop is something that I think shares some DNA with Dark. And I know a lot of people, Dark, and I mean, I mentioned it early on in the podcast a lot, but Dark and Stranger Things came out kind of contemporaneously with one another back in season one. And a lot of folks were like, gosh, if you love Stranger Things, go scope out Dark. So I think this is in that same vein of that weird kind of Stephen King-esque, like young adult horror genre space. So it seems very exciting, but any kind of projects that they are going to touch in the future, I am here for.
Listen to this about Till. Till is a scrawny boy growing up in a quiet village until his father, a miller with a forbidden interest in alchemy and magic, is found out by the church. After Till flees with the baker's daughter, he falls in love with the traveling performer who teaches him a trade. As a juggler and jester, Till forges his own path through a world devastated by the 30 Years War, evading witch hunters, escaping a collapsed mine outside of a siege city, and entertaining the exiled king and queen along the way. It's a riveting story and a moving tribute to the power of art in the faceless, senseless brutality of history. Doesn't this sound fun? Witchcraft and magic, alchemy and magic.
Wizardry. So,
yeah, plant area they haven't really gone yet. So like, anyway,
I'm still stuck on something's killing the children. I'm like, yeah, well, we know who.
Yeah, it's Noah Helgi.
It's Helgi. It's stealing the children. You said wizardry, Ariel. All I could think about is that scene at the end of 1899 that closes on Black Sabbath's The Wizard. Right. That's a scene that haunts me. Yeah, I mean, they're great creators, you know, and I would love to see them getting the opportunity to do more work. I wonder about their relationship with Netflix, given the like unceremonious kind of ending of 1899. Regardless, I mean, they were such a supported creator. It felt like coming out of Dark to get to see auteurs in a non-English speaking show get to complete a project like this was pretty exciting, and I think we should be grateful that we've got it all told for us.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about Dark, because that is the show we spent many a weeks, which I don't mean to immediately be like, but what's next?
But what's next, Grace?
I know. Well, the endings are just beginnings, as they say. So Fiona writes in with a great piece of feedback. It's about the entire show. And it says, the funniest part of Dark is how Jonas, arguably the dirtiest character, is the only person who canonically showers. He lives for 84 years, showered once, and by that logic has the best hygiene of all the characters.
Thoughts? Incredible. I mean, listeners will know that I was on the dirt beat, just like Fiona was back from season one Stranger Days, and then, you know, trying to clock it. I think she's right that he showered that one time and that's it. Like, we saw them showering. I'm trying to think of just water in general. We saw them showering.
There's a lot of rain.
Some radiation off of their protective gear, for whatever good that was.
I mean, Marta comes home drenched in blood. She doesn't even shower. She just washes.
A lot of people wash their hands. Lady Macbeth style in the sink.
But they're washing their hands of having to shower. That's what it feels like.
It does rain a lot in Winden. I don't know if that has
any. Acid rain.
She then also, because this is the way the form is filled out, I do like filled out the rest of the form, which is on a scale of 1 to 3. What do you rate this episode? Even though it's about the whole thing, is a 3.33. So for the whole show. And then an MVP is Stranger Jonas for taking a shower, and an LVP is Jonas for never showering again. So appreciate your commitment to filling out the form, Fiona. I very much appreciate
this.
That.
Is a 3.3 form fill.
Yeah. 3.34 Fiona. Very well played.
Having watched it again, Rich, and not only did you watch it again, I believe in the course of our rewatch, I think you did this too. I think, Errol, you and I rewatched it before we started and then did the rewatch as we went episodically. And you might have done this too, Rich, but Rich, also in the middle, you like, I think you like finished the ship, right? You just like
double
going
rewatched.
And then
I double
came
rewatched.
Back. Yeah, amazing.
As we closed in season two coverage, there comes a point towards the end of season two where it just, I feel like, gathers so much momentum.
Yeah.
I think season one starts slow. We talked about it being this investigative detective drama almost before it reveals the totality of the story they're telling towards the end. But by the time the hook set into me at the end of season two, I powered through and watched all of it. And then that happened to me again, maybe like 3 weeks later, where as we were digging into the season three episodes, for maybe season three, episode three, I ended up just carrying it out and watching it all. So I've watched it three times since we started the podcast, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So having watched it three times, started the podcast, what for you is like the biggest takeaway? Because I feel like last week and we talked, we obviously it's such a great finale. It really wraps things up. But what are your sort of biggest takeaways in terms of going back and revisiting this show? What are your takeaways?
So it validated my initial take, which is that this is just amongst the most methodically plotted television shows there is. I think there's even more like connective tissue that validates its own mythology than I remembered on first watch. Like, there are so many tiny details that are really easy to overlook that I hope we pointed out most of that just justify all of the logic as they present it within the show, the gun not firing notwithstanding, right? But the other thing that really struck me just to the storytelling of it is how I think of it as such an ensemble show, and there's so many integral and really compelling characters in this cast, but the amount of time that we spend with any given one of them is way less than it feels like on review. right? Like, you know, we made a little joke out of it of like, oh my God, Bartosz the hero, though. But I feel like the economy of storytelling, this is something I've been talking about on a lot of podcasts lately, but amongst which is Good Omens, Grace. It's a short, like 6-episode kind of season. And I think they're doing such a good job presenting the information really effectively with the time they have. And over the course of a pretty limited run, I mean, we're talking less than 30 episodes, they're able to flesh out an ensemble that rivals that of like a Game of Thrones with well-realized, incredible character arcs for people as kind of thinly developed as Clausen, right? As a one character, like mid-tier villain, let's call him. And it's just so impressive in retrospect how effectively they manage their time with this vast of an array of characters and complex ideas.
I do agree with that. And I want to build off your point, but you made me think of it, which is if all these characters live in Westeros, who is on the Iron Throne at the end of
oh my God.
Game of
It's Queen Dark Claudia. Thrones. It's Queen Claudia.
I think it is Queen Claudia. that does track. Yeah. But actually in the Game of Thrones style, it's actually like, probably is like, not Bartosz. It probably is like, I don't know, like Magnus.
Now I'm thinking about, because my first thought was like, oh my God, what about the Throners time traveling? And then I'm like, oh, Cersei would. And I'm like, oh my God, Cersei is basically Hannah.
Yeah.
Oh like, my God.
But Hannah somehow cares about her kids even
But it's her son Cersei, who does the incest.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, it would be Mickle, but I think if we're tracking like, the Game of Thrones TV show, like it would probably be Killian or something like
that. Yeah, something like that. No, that one tracks in terms of someone who was cast early on to play a huge role. And as I pointed out, that I think rightly so, they couldn't end up using him at the end. He got too big, you know, so I think that one tracks. That's a Mickle to Bran. It's a good.
Yeah, got too big for his own part. We had to ride him out for a season, you know.
So on the point of just like the richness of characters, I think that's an excellent point that. You look at this cast list on Wikipedia and it's ginormous. And it's not just on top of that, there's the extra challenge that Yante and Bo give themselves, which is, yeah, and what if we also see three versions of like a bunch of these characters at different times in their life played by different actors, which can be a hard thing to pull off to feel like when you watch a TV show, you're like, yeah, it's not resonating with me that like that's supposed to be that person, right? That older person is supposed to be the person who I knew before. But I think the fact that the show is really only 26 episodes, and there's whole episodes where you don't see somebody, including our main characters. I don't have it in front of me. Pull it up on the IMDb. Like in terms of like how many episodes is like Jonas in this show, and not even like stranger Jonas or Adam. Like we could do that too, but like just how many times someone is not there. And it's the fact that like they're so well written and the writing I think is so strong to tell us who these people are that we can seemingly get to know them so well, which is extra impressive because it's a mystery show that is supposed to, you're not always supposed to know who's behind what, who's doing what, etc. The fact that I do think it's the writing I think that really makes it so that I feel invested in every character that for the most part that's on the show, I think is a really, really impressive feat and one I come away from the rewatch being impressed by again. I think maybe because I'm binging it, I'm not thinking about like, oh man, I didn't get any like there's no Mickle this week, you know, or there was no Elizabeth this week. And the fact that I hadn't really noticed that impressive skill that they have before. I don't know, Ira, what are your takeaways from what you're watching?
First of all, I love that we each did it slightly differently. Like I actually watched it once. This is before we started recording. I watched it once, kept writing down all my questions, then watched it fully through a second time to try to answer all my questions, and then have watched it now as through the podcast watching. So I love that the three of us, the triangle, watched it a little bit differently. Well, no, triangle, I guess, is more 1899.
It's the three cats. Damn it. It
is the damn it again. You caught me again. This mysterious shape. It's tremendous. This point, I've loved hearing both of you speak about this point of the... It's almost like it's so good you don't think about it, this on the ensemble piece of it. We're so distracted, deservedly so, on the show's part, of at how well cast it is across like the different versions of people, the different timelines, different actors playing the same character, but all basically looking the same or similar enough that you absolutely believe it, that you lose sight of that fact of like you have in some ways main characters that like a different version of the word character for this show than it would be on any other show because you have so many different versions of people. So I can only think of the, you know, some of the first time I think we're in the 50s and the first time we're in the 80s, you know, there are a couple of firsts that we don't leave the place we are to return to the world that we know, or at least the characters that we're first introduced to. And you don't feel it. Like, I remember you, Grace, that was one of those episodes, was one of your favorite up to that point, the 50s episode, I think,
mm-hmm.
Early on in the, or, you know, in the back half of season one. So it's super impressive. I have so many like time travel-y thoughts, and I guess similar to Rich now, it's like you're always going to be grading it against, and that's in some ways unfair to every other show or property or movie, but the economical storytelling here is top notch.
To a point that you made there, Grace, this is such a mystery box show in a really traditional way, and they're dealing with a complex idea in the most complex way they could, by multicasting the characters, by having like these intermittent timelines that are converging with one another, where events from season three are actually influencing the choices in season one. It's really complex, right? And a term that I throw around a lot, just talking about TV here on PSR, is like typical television. And I say it kind of disdainfully, you know, I joke about being an elitist jerk, but the time when I grew up in the world in the 80s and 90s, you turned on an average TV show, there's a thinness of writing, you know, there's like a lack of sophistication. The questions don't need to be validated that strongly. The logic in the show, like, only ever needs to go so far because it's like they know the audience is here to like come along with us for the hour, right? And they just went the extra mile with all of their characters to really develop these people so fully and so emotionally. I mean, part of what we talked about over the past 6 months is just how deeply emotionally traumatic and satisfying and fraught this whole story is alongside being a mystery box. And I think to Ariel's point, it may be unfair to grade other projects against Dark, but I challenge other creators to like rise to the occasion. You know, I watch the show and it feels like people who were inspired to tell a story that they were inspired by, not somebody showing up for a job. And a lot of TV does feel like that, I hate to say.
Yeah, I think for me, it's there's so much care put into the show. Like I reference this a lot when we first started, but getting to go to the 1899 premiere, and I was asking them, like, with this new show, was this something that, like, the way that Dark was mapped out and planned out in terms of everything is so thoughtful. I said, is that something that you were excited to do again, or were you excited to try to do something different? And they said, no, that's how we make TV. That's if we're going to make a television show, every single shot in the show is methodically chosen for a reason. And I think that, you know, seems daunting, but we look back at the show and I feel like it is, you're like, yeah, it's there. Everything is so meticulous and so there. And the fact that they can do that, And actually, though, make it all make sense for why the characters do different things, I think it is, for me, what puts like the cherry on top for this show, what really elevates it. Because there are other time travel shows where it's like, oh yeah, the time travel like math all works out, but like, why would they go do that thing? Why would they do that? And that's not this show. It's like everything. I mean, it's how many times do we get that quote about like, you can't will what you want. No, what is it, Rich?
Schopenhauer. Yeah. A man can will as he wants, but right. He cannot will what he wants.
Yes, right. So that, like, that thesis, like driving the show forward, of like pushing every character forward in terms of what they want. And you know, like, it got to the point where we make jokes on the pod about like, you just tell Jonas that he can save Marta and he will, mm-hmm. he's gonna move. Like, but like, it makes so much sense to the point where like he never kind of gets over that, except for the fact, like even at the end, he just wants her not to have ever suffered. Right. So the character progression, it just blended so well. The fact that it can all logically make sense, and the fact that all logically sense also makes sense for like what the characters would do, I think is just so impressive, Ariel.
Yeah. And I think hearing you two talk about the news of what they're potentially working on and getting to see, like, we didn't get to see a lot of 1899, but we know we got to see at least a third of it, right?
What we got to see was a drop.
Three.
it was an ocean. It hurts.
Oh God, it hurts so good. I even just getting to see that, between that and Dark, I think the highs for me are so high that I am so inspired, frankly, but more importantly than inspired, looking forward to and not worried at all about them as storytellers going forward and matching the highs that they, not to say that it will be easy for them to attain the same level of perfection as Dark, but I think as far as profoundness of story and the care that they take with character motivations, like you two were just saying, it's almost like Nolan-esque for me at this point, the way I'm thinking about them, in the sense of like, just let them cook and do whatever they want, because if you leave them alone to their own devices, they seem to be just exuding creativity. It's not like Dark was, like they wrote 1899 before Dark. So they clearly have so many ideas and are so creative in a way, you know, being a partnership, I'm sure helps a lot. And they have, an incredible effect on each other, I'm sure. They're a perfect match. Never believe anything else. that it's really exciting. It's really exciting to think down the road in the future, in like 10 years and 15 years, what will they have been capable of, as long as they don't get canceled prematurely.
It's you know, we talk so much about so much TV around here. There's this constant discussion of like our favorite shows, the best shows, and debating that. And I'm sure at varying points in time across this podcast, all of us have articulated, this is one of the best shows or one of our favorite shows. I think it's like in my top three Hallmark. And part of rewatching it was kind of validating that. Like, do I still feel that way about it? Was it that impactful? And there is so much good TV out there, stuff that I love to go back to, comfort television, a television that challenged me, impressed me, opened my mind to a different world. But it's so striking that this little non-English show with a cast of absolute strangers who are not speaking in my native language could be as captivating and compelling as they are, right? In another show like this, I would come out of it. You watch a show like Succession and you want to see what these other folks have worked on, you know? So I found myself like digging through the IMDb of these, of the actors that they assembled here, right? Because I think that part of the strike in the past couple of months has conveyed to us that we need to sometimes like look beyond the like showrunners that are making these things, at the ensemble of staff they have around them, all of like the invisible folks that contribute. And it's just, you imagine it takes such a team to pull this off. When we talk about the continuity of season three, all the reverse imaging of the shots, like all of that mirrored like cinematography that we're getting in the Commonwealth House at the end, like that's being done in pre-production. It's all really incredible attention to detail, Grace, to your point earlier, by a lot of people beyond the two showrunners. And I just think like, all together for this little show to make such a splash, is it like never ceases to astound me.
All aboard! Welcome to the Friskies Express. Please keep all paws and tails inside the train. To the right, you'll see Crunch Canyon. To your left is Filet Falls. Now you're passing Party Mix Peak. Today's delicioso tour is almost over. But don't worry, with Friskies, there's always more to explore. Check out friskies.com to explore more.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Yeah, I mean, they do have three films that they did before, at least Yante did, Bo did. Yante, I think, worked on his film, Who Am I? But this is their first TV show. And I do think the fact that it's a German Netflix property gives it a fair bit of sort of the ability to be under the radar, to sort of surprise people in a way that it just blew people out of the water. Like I just remember, you know, the first time you learn that the stranger is Jonas, the first time you learn that Michael is Mikkel, the Charlotte Elizabeth stuff, it just like continually blows your mind. And it's so good. I think with 1899, they obviously got a bigger budget. They decide to go, bigger, more global in it's not a German show. It's people from all over. And they have such this reputation that it's so unfortunate that Netflix didn't just let them keep going. But they're, it seems like in my estimation that has to be like, it just didn't do the numbers that
they got a little bit of like an Atlas scenario almost, where because it's so much of a bigger budget show, they had to hold the world on their shoulders. There's much more pressure.
Right. So I'm sort of hoping that whatever they do next does feel like smaller in scale, just in the idea of like, if you have three seasons of a show, just like to try to do it with this little tiny budget, the show, it's just, I do love that. And it's what I've loved about, I loved when we did the first watch in the Discord, one of the first sort of post-show recaps Discord projects that like happened was a rewatch of Dark. A bunch of people have been like, people are talking like, what's your favorite TV show? A lot of people listed Dark just for how good it is, or like recommending TV shows. And so that happened. That's really how the three of us got connected on the show, at least. We knew each other from other things as well, but where we like centered in that when 1899 was coming back, flagged on our radar as something we'd want to cover here on post-show recaps. And then the idea of getting to go back and do, we have to go back and cover Dark, was so exciting. And I think it is because like, I definitely feel like there's very few people who I've said, you should go watch Dark, who come back and like, yeah, I don't think it's for me. The only obstacles are like, if people don't love subtitled, foreign language shows, right? Like that's the thing. And it is like dense, and it's a show that you need to be like watching and not just like second screening. But it's been so fun over the course of this podcast for people to like pop in the Discord, send a Twitter DM, send a message on Twitter being like, oh, I didn't think I would go back and do the show, because it's such a commitment to go back and watch Dark. Like, it's not like, oh, I have a lazy weekend, I think I'm just going to put on Dark for like the whole, like, I don't know that it's that type of show, but it is the show you keep thinking about. And the more that somebody is like, we're like, okay, we're going to rewatch it. That it was so fun to see people either rewatch it. I think we had a few people who watched the whole thing so that like they could join us on the spoiler filled podcast that we did, and then people who rewatch it for another time and just getting to live in sort of the appreciation that we're having for this show.
Yeah, I know we did. I know we had a couple of folks that dove in and tried to get their full watch on to catch up with us. And I'm with you. I just, I try to talk a lot about the philosophy and the weird metaphysics of it, because I do think there's a lot to extrapolate. It's a show that leaves you thinking. I think it will. I mean, I said it early on, but it since having watched Dark, just season one, it has influenced the way that I view a lot of time travel properties. It's hard for it not to, because of how effective it is. It kind of like attacking that genre, and it just it's an absolute treasure, I think. And as we find ourselves in this landscape where more and more projects have so much attention on them from the earliest stages of their pre-production, right, as soon as something's greenlit, I mean, here's the three of us getting excited about like rumored collaborations of these two potentially working on something, that to come out of the gate with that kind of pressure, I just hope that they are given the opportunity and the creative liberty to get to make something like this again. I think it's a real like time in the world. The other thing about Dark that strikes me is how not old it is. I feel as though I watched the last season a long time ago, but it was only finished airing in 2019, right? Season three airs in the summer of 2019, in the midst of like the lockdowns and
2020, like, right? 2020
was it? 2020?
Yeah.
Okay, so even sooner,
because we weren't in lockdown in 2019,
Yeah, I do. I guess I do. It's all a bit of a blur. You know, the time traveling has thrown me off here. Exactly. What year is it? Where are, why not Forest Road?
Yeah, what year is it? But what year? You should ask.
What year? It just really, it like strikes me that it will age like a fine wine. Right. There are certain like time travel movies, even the beloved, the trilogy itself of Back to the Future. I think for folks who didn't grow up in the 80s, you have to lose a little bit going back to that. Like for me and my generation, it's always going to resonate. But there's something to the way Dark uses this little loop of time and set itself with 2019. And it was like airing contemporary with the timeline it was presenting, driving towards like this apocalypse date, which was all really fascinating. And
well, Back to the Future is you can will what you want.
I guess
if you want your family to exist, you can make sure that that happens.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's child's play. That's child's play comparison.
No, that's Chucky. Ariel, I was what is your? So I mean, it's hard not to. I feel like I was going to ask this question. It's hard not to just be like, well, it's the love story of Jonas and Marta. But do you have like a particular favorite sort of like story? Line through line. I mean, it's also like interconnected, so that feels tricky. But is there like, you know, if you think back to like the times when we're spending with this thing in particular, is there like a thing that they feel like after rewatching it is the thing that is like your favorite? You get the most excited about seeing like this kind of thing happen, whether it's like Charlotte's trying to figure out who her mom is, or Ulrich's traveling back in time being a crazy old man. You know, is there anything in particular?
I'm gonna cheat a little bit and talk about something that I was like really ruminating on, but I think it does answer the question of like a thing that I haven't been able to stop thinking about because of us rewatching and because of our conversation, and is the thing that is kind of, besides, there are two things that came out of that, like what is it called, that simmered up to the top for me, that bubbled up. One was Bartosz, our hero forever.
Yeah,
and ever.
Very fun.
That was incredible. And two, and to feel that so organically too, like that's just like undeniable. Like you're, the evidence speaks for itself, Your Honor. The other thing is, you know, I will never forget. I am proud that my first time getting emotional on a podcast, and by that I mean actually crying, was this show and these two people that I'm going to mention now, Marta and Jonas, Adam and Eve. The idea that, you know, and I got emotional thinking about their sacrifice, right? Their selfish act that they had to commit in order to do this good that was basically doing harm to themselves. And to that point, I was really struck earlier today about this thing in my head, thinking about the two of them, right? There's this line that keeps coming up throughout where it's more related to Jonas, and shout out to Charlotte who is talking to him in this moment. And he says, she's like, how do you bring something back from the dead? Right. And he says, you have to, you can, but you have to find it before it dies. And she calls him crazy. But the idea that like Adam and Eve and Marta and Jonas was my upstairs neighbor growing up. Jonas, they have to work together right across time. But the idea that in order to like make this final actual plan work, the idea that Adam and Eve had already died, like Adam talks so much about the three deaths that you have, and other characters talk about that. And like the idea that they were so far gone in their trauma that they were basically dead. And you could argue, and we did at various points, that because they didn't have each other, that was part of the death, the spiritual death that they had experienced. And so to take the metaphor, if you have to catch them when they're younger, you have to go back to before they died those deaths in order to catch Marta and Jonas at a time where they are like willing to do what needs to be done. And ironically, it's by killing themselves. Like it's so the layers and the layers and the layers on top of each other are just so impressive, but they are able to bring a piece because of them being caught by themselves. Like it's Adam who seeks out through Claudia, but it's Adam who has to seek Jonas out. It's incredible. Like that's not something that I had ever thought about, and the depth of it, the subtlety of it, but like the really complicated heaviness of it, And just a prime example for me of the way that the character motivations and the science, the hard science, the soft science, whatever you want to say about that, work together so seamlessly. And that's what makes the show mean so much to so many people. I love these two. And I've never really thought about them so much in a complete set like that. It's always been the two of them separate and their storylines, as dumb as that sounds. And this was the first time that, like, I can't. They really are inextricable from each other, right? They're the knot. They're the thing they're that creates the origin.
That's a tremendous read. That's like a really satisfying metaphor that I hadn't really pondered. And it just brings me back again to when I talk about these guys as being like inspired artists. I was really fortunate in high school. I got to take a class on the Renaissance. I got to take a bunch of classes on the Renaissance and Renaissance Italy in particular. And the like height of scientists, artists like Da Vinci, and ultimately this fusion of science and art. And these guys were paramount philosophers of their age, right? The art that they created was meant to articulate big ideas of philosophy that are hard to conceptualize. Like this thing that I fixated on a lot as we drew towards the end of our coverage is the notion of a cycle, the loop, the deterministic system, a causal loop, and the function of like the cycle is just like a thought experiment that allows the people within the loop to understand it and compartmentalize it, right? But I love that that's a read that you're able to get after having watched this show countless times, Ariel, because like it's so on point of the metaphor of their deaths and having to like, how do you save somebody? Well, you have to get them before they died. And you do, whether it be like that spiritual death, that death of innocence. It's really, really good. And it just strikes me as to why I find it such a resonant work, because it's just operating on so many levels, right? Of like the subconscious, emotional, the tactical, like scientific, and then the ambiguous philosophical that we can never really know the answers to, Grace, because all we have are drops.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny you're talking about the Renaissance, and I'm thinking like, Leonardo da Vinci, who like, you look at what he did, he's like a scientist, a theorist, an architect. What's he most known for? Probably. I mean, I feel like it's the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, religious iconography, right? Yeah.
Right. And just like a portrait of a woman, you know, how you interpret that painting is up to you. But like, he did all the science stuff, and then, you know, there he is doing that. So I just think that's really interesting. Rich, what's your like your favorite? I mean, it can be the same.
So I think that there are two that really resonate. I mean, the Jonas and Marta storyline, I think, is really powerful. And I love how important it is to you, Ariel, because it gave me like more investment in it along the way. Not like I needed that much more. But I was like not shy about my like undying affection for Claudia. And gosh, it struck me this time the masterstroke of her plan, right? Like I knew the idea, but I think if you go back to the early coverage of us in season one, having not fully rewatched the show just before we started, it was a little duller on me. The like, no, Claudia really like saves the day here. Like she's the absolute manipulator behind the manipulator. She's so good that she's able to operate around them. And I think just as a through line, it's so compelling to me to just examine as like a curiosity level of like, was this a foregone conclusion? Is this a bit of a response from like Baron and Bo about like and Baron and Yanta about the affection for the character and like Julia Yenkin's performance in season one? I think that she has such like a breakout, like kind of explosive season one of Claudia rappelling down the rope in the pantsuit. She became like an instant icon and deeply beloved, right? So there's always that question there, but it really is so satisfying. You said it last week, Grace, of like you come into that finale with the question of like, was she that awesome throughout? Like, no, she actually was. Like all the terrible stuff, the death of Aegon notwithstanding. The other thing that really struck me on this watch, and it struck me because of how like kind of off the radar they fall, is the love affair of Katarina and Ulrich, dare I say. Because while Jonas and Marta are like these like cosmically intertwined entities that are like destined to save the world together, Katarina and Ulrich are like really typical people in a lot of ways, where like they're this high school couple who gets together and kind of grows apart, but like could figure out a way
to tie someone up in the forest.
Yeah, exactly. Tie their friends up in the forest. And like, as you do when you're in high school, as you do, Ariel. But just like how ultimately relatable their story is, of like them just being like average dysfunctional people who kind of can't get on the same page together and like ultimately are like driven to rise above all their BS for their kids, but have like these cosmic walls that they come crashing into and cannot surmount. I just think they have like a really beautiful story. They're such compelling characters, and it strikes me how deeply important they are to the plot and the setup in the beginning, and how ultimately they're like the conclusion of their stories in season three. It's for us, it's not for them. It's like to satisfy our investment in the characters, not necessarily like advance anything plot wise, right? But I just love them as a couple and as people that are relatable to us as folks that are not involved in these grand time travel conspiracies watching this show.
Yeah. I think for me going back is just how much I just love spending time. I think with people who are not our main cast, and it's not that I don't love the Jonas and Marta stuff. I absolutely do. And I think it's perfect. Never forget it. But in terms of, for me, there's a, I have a love of pro wrestling, and I always talk about, I'm a little bit of a hipster pro wrestling fan in that like whoever is like the champion or whatever, I'm like, not interested, but like who's down the card? Who's trying out a silly gimmick that's like never going to make it to the top of the card. So I just, for me, that's why like Bickle really resonates with me so much at the beginning. This poor kid, like this could be, like they could have just like gone and made their own movie about literally this kid, like the kid who plays Bickle.
Oh, for real.
Like him getting stuck in the 80s and what that's like a sad drama about him and Enos Conwald without any of the time travel stuff. Like, forget it. They could have just done that. Peter, a complicated man, maybe not the greatest father or husband, but like so complicated. And that story is so rich. Charlotte too, the like, her finding her mother and that whole thing. Like there's just so many other folks who I'm just so happy to spend a time with. And honestly, that's where I think I love like the 50s episode where we're kind of like so isolated from like Jonas doesn't know how to get back. So we're just sort of like stuck here living with the, but what year is it? Stuck with the consequences of the time travel and getting to hang out. Like that surrounding cast is just so good. Alexander and Regina is one that like, just, I think this is the most I've liked Alexander by a long shot. In a rewatch, I know like there's no reason for me to dislike him, but I think on a binge, I think it's that sort of like the disdain you have for him and the he's a murderer. You know, he literally did murder somebody. I feel like that's so much harder to get away from in a way that I think on my rewatch and doing it weekly, I'm like, this is just a dude trying to be a good husband. You know, he's trying to forget the mistake he made in the past. And yes, the mistake he made was really big, but he's just trying so hard. So yeah, Clausen is someone you talked about who's like, he shows up for one season and he gets a lot of MVP points on, or LVP, sorry, on our leaderboard, which I think is really impressive for like, I think through my first go watch, I'm like, what are we doing? Especially when he doesn't show back up, but I feel like he's really, ends up being useful. So I think that's where I have such an appreciation that I think, the deeper you go in this show, it's still working on such a good level, like such a high quality level. I think
it's a tremendous ensemble, right? I mean, Egon, like Bernd Doppler, even there's just so many, Tannhaus himself, right? For such like a central important character to all of this, it really struck me on this rewatch how clueless Tannhaus is. Tannhaus doesn't know anything, right? They just basically show up like, I hear you're a watch fixer, this. Yeah. I'll be back.
I love the my wrestling thing as well. The unknown coming in and just being so friggin' evil in the end, and then it's like, you know, it's a kid holding a guy at gunpoint. You know, they kind of get redeemed.
Yes, he's like comically evil.
But then they get a bit of like, you know, redemption when they're just like, they just want to hug their mom. You know, like, geez, yeah. All right. We're not done with Dark, but let's shift gears into what we are doing next week, which is, I think we've landed on, and if you have a better name, let us know, but this is the best we've come up with. We are handing out the Windies Award. In the vein of the Throners, we are going to give out our award to our favorite Dark moments. We'll go through the categories, announce them. You can vote in the show notes. You can vote for the winners of all these categories. We're going to walk through them and sort of as a group, we will fine tune the nominees for all these awards, maybe add some categories, etc. Let's start. I think the first one, and I've done a lot of this off the top of my head, so feel free to change anything you'd like, Rich and Ariel. But I have the "But what year is it?" award for excellence in time travel.
But what year?
A good time traveler does ask what year it is, I think. Here are all the people who time traveled the show: Claudia, Eric, Gretchen the dog, Helgi, Jonas, Mads, Marta, Noah, Yasin. Whether Gretchen actually technically doesn't someone brings Claudia does bring Gretchen through, right?
Maybe. I'm missing she that. She gets baited through the cave, and then Claudia brings her back. Yeah,
I'm hesitant to leave on. So this is from the Wikipedia. These are all the people who time traveled. Obviously, like multiple versions of Jonas, multiple versions of Marta, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a little hesitant to leave Yasin, Mads, and Eric on here, but as you said before we started, Eric and Mads pretty much kickstart this whole thing in terms of figuring out it's a time travel show.
Yeah, you don't take my Yasin off any list, Grace. I'm not having it. I would venture to advocate for. Are we adding? We can add people if they time travel. Need to add Bartosz because he's got one of like the coolest time travel arrival moments, and we got to add the Unknown, right? Triquetra himself of the Unknown, should be on this list.
Agnes also. There's a whole crew of them. I forgot when Claudia sends them out. There's a whole crew of them.
For sure. Those are the only two like that I think like might get some important votes that seem obviously missing to me on first glance.
We'll add the Unknown. We'll add Bartosz. Anybody you want to add here, Ariel? Excellence in time traveling.
I would like to add the coin. The coin on the pendant.
Okay.
So good. So good.
Is that like the
okay?
Great. He has to do so much.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm just gonna add a category at the bottom that I just thought of. So just bear with me. All right. The next award is the Don't Get in the Chair award for poor time travel.
I'm really hoping my yes is also on this list.
Yeah, it's all the same people from the previous list, but we are missing a lot of people because like we have Agnes and all these people. So I'll add Bartosz and the Unknown. They can be eligible for worst time traveler.
But I got one mandatory add for worst time traveler. I think it's got to be Wyndon's number one mom, Hannah Comwalt. I think that's been added in terms of like, let me just steal my son's machine and abandon Amir.
True. There's also always going to be an other option if people want to write in. Very difficult for a write in to win, but we shall see if we get there. Okay. Anybody else for worst time traveler?
Worst.
I don't know. It's tricky. Yeah. I feel like if you get to time travel, you're doing pretty great.
Jonas is on there. So just as far as like the physical look, that you could totally make that argument for him. Hannah, she wasn't really bad at it. She's just evil. So maybe
here's a question. Should these people be, should the stranger, should Jonas, the stranger, and the Adam be dipped? They're all the same.
I think we got to keep them the same for clarity, or we're going to just dilute our votes too much to make them count. I would actually also, for the worst time traveler, maybe want to add Katarina.
Okay.
She does end up having to go back and kill her own mom. who will then go home and beat her up for having had to murder her, you know? So
All right.
I know we could add almost everybody, but these are just the ones that like immediately leaping out to me for each category, you know?
Yeah. I don't have a name for this one yet, but I do think we got to have best death. This is a pretty classic Throners award. So far I have Noah killing Claudia, Adam killing Marta the first time in the house, Adam killing Marta and the Origin, Marta killing Jonas, Agnes kills Noah, Adam kills Noah, Agnes kills, no, who does Agnes, Agnes does kill, no- wait, who kills?
Yeah, Agnes does kill Noah.
It's Agnes who kills Noah, not Adam who kills Noah. This is right?
Adam just gives the thumbs up. Yeah.
All right, I have Claudia kills Claudia, the chair kills Mads, Eric, Yasin, the apocalypse kills so many people.
Wait, I feel like if you're gonna have Adam kills Marta the first time, you have to have Adam kills Marta the second.
I do have it. I do have Adam kills Marta at the Nielsen at the Conwald house, and then I on a separate line, I have Adam kills Marta and the origin.
Ah, see, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
What about the birds, Grace? The birds. What about Tannhaus kills the birds? Is it Tannhaus? It could be the apocalypse.
The portal kills the birds.
Yeah, we
right?
call it the passage. The passage kills the birds. Yeah. I just want to account for all the dead birds because there's a lot of them in Winden.
Best bird. The sheep, you know, who also
died. Oh, the sheep. I don't even want to start with the sheep. We're ignoring them.
Are there any other notable deaths? I
mean, the kids, there's how about Jonas kills Hannah? How dare we forget that one? Is that not on there? That's a pretty good one.
I mean, we like that and we like that.
And what about how am I forgetting her name? The mother of Katarina. What about the mother of Katarina killed Katarina? I think we got to add that one, right?
Katarina's mom, Dark. Helene.
I could add, Helene. I could add them all too. I don't want to add Claudia kills Egon. I don't think that we should put that on the list.
Oh, I am going to add that one. I am.
Oh, drat. Damn it. I should. Yeah.
All right. Okay. This one, I don't actually have anything listed yet, but I do think we should have what's best scene/moment. These are moments I'm thinking of, like the stranger is outside of Jonas's, Jonas is in the bunker. What are some of your other, we could go on forever. So I think we'll have to like limit ourselves here, but if you have thoughts,
Council of Claudius, right? It's like Claudia meeting Claudia at the end.
I mean, for sure the right, you have Jonas, like the stranger outing himself to Jonas, right? That's what you meant outside the bunker. Yep. The letter, Jonas reads the letter from his dad.
There's so many.
Just so many. Noah discovers the truth about Charlotte and Elizabeth.
Yeah. I do love, I mean, I'm one of my favorite, it's like the first one, which is that Mikkel realizes he has time traveled.
Oh yeah, for sure. This may be way out in left field, but I would want to add Schrodinger's cat too.
But would you, or would it be, would it be added, or would it, okay? No.
Yeah. It's hard to know. But.
Any other? The final. I do think we should add the final like disappearance of
glimmer. No, the something.
Actually, I probably like
severing the knot. Right, it's cutting the knot. Ooh,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Gosh, we're probably missing some bit.
AKA the end of the world.
They're welcome to the future.
Yeah, welcome to the future, bitch. We need,
Yes, the pretend keep moment that never happened that we made up.
Didn't it happen? Are we sure? Maybe we should rewatch it again.
Yeah, it's Schrodinger's bitch.
All right. Anything else you want to add? We can also do this the podcast would go out later, so we have time to keep adding. But
there are so many here. I'm counting on the listeners to hit us up. I think especially for this category, like send us seeds, because like we could fill this out with 10,000. So I'm just showing incredible
strength. On the last Throners that happened, I believe, what is the name? Doogie Howser.
Yes.
There's a Game of Thrones named one, picked all the categories. I do think if we like, there's a write-in that we're like, oh my god, that's obviously the best scene, we might override your voting, your democratic rights as a voter. Listeners, I'm so sorry, but all right, the We're Perfect award,
10 time travel world,
the We're Perfect award for best couple. So I have Jonas and Marta, Regina Alexander, I have Ulrich and Katarina / Hannah / Charlotte, I have Agnes and Doris, and then I have Helgi and Pinecone.
Helgi and Pinecones is inspired.
What about Helgi and Rocks
and Rock?
To
his face.
That's toxic.
I think it's maybe
it's toxic. Jonte wrote
every episode of this show, right? I think Jonte and people getting their face smashed in with rocks probably on the list.
Yeah, it should be
face smashing for sure.
We could do Baron Bo'Adar and Jonte Frise.
Oh,
yeah.
They exist in like the real universe, the third.
Any other? Are there any other?
Maybe for best scene, Adam remembering the two cats.
all at that.
But that's like a, I feel like that's like a sarcastic one.
I feel compelled to suggest Claudia and Bernd Doppler, but you okay. know, you do with that as you will.
Ooh, I, can we do, can I mean, I put no, the love triangle,
me, but I don't have the solitary veto.
I put the love like quadruple, not square, whatever. With all
I mean,
like,
look, you could add Claudia and Bernd slash Tronte. Just try to catch some extra Tronte yeah. votes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Was Tronte.
Tronte and his mustache.
We also could have Claudia and Gretchen. Oh, actually, if we want, well, yeah, okay. No, I was thinking of that's just Claudia and Tronte, but I was thinking about when they were young. It's like those are the same people. Mm-hmm. How do I not? I don't have Magnus and Francisco here.
Oh my God! First couple died in the apocalypse together.
And Elizabeth and Yasin or Noah?
Yasin, yeah, her Yasin, not her Yasin. Forget about Noah. Okay. He was just a replacement for Yasin.
Oh, Bartosz and Silja.
That's about as good as Helgi and the Rocks, that one, I think.
Okay, all right.
He's going to Rocks.
He's going to Rocks. In every universe, Helgi's going to Rocks.
Oh, no.
All right, I have the A Journey Through Time Award for Best Bootstrap Paradox. So I have Elizabeth as Charlotte's daughter, mom. Tannhaus built a time machine. We have Michael's letter. Also Michael's suicide, which we could argue whether this is the same, but I feel like the fact that like he writing the letter and then the fact that like Jonas goes back because of Adam is potentially different. And then Helgi's coin I have as well.
Michael's letter. I'm like, you want to combine them? I think it's very complicated.
I know.
Michael's journey. It's like they are two distinct.
We could just say Mikkel slash
Michael. Yeah. I mean, it's so tough because like we start, everything connects to everything the Mikkel, right, as we start going. Because like I'm compelled to put Katarina's name, but then it's like what the whole ghost in the lake thing. Like the whole ghost in the lake thing is so fascinating. And then I don't even know if it is a bootstrap paradox, but like Ulrich in the mental institution. I get, is it? Isn't it? I don't know. Katarina's name, definitely.
Well, Aegon hating Ulrich is, right?
Like, yes.
Aegon hating Ulrich is certainly like, he wouldn't hate him if he didn't meet the old man who now reminds him of this stupid kid, right?
Yes, yeah. I think. Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. We'll leave it there. All right. So we talked about adding this earlier. Best parent.
I mean, I think there's a lot of good parents. I think you could put Alexander in there. I think you could put Claudia in there. I think you could definitely put Aegon in there. Let's put Anna just to see what happens, right?
Yes. Chaos.
Similarly to best time travel and worst time travel, we can just have the same nominees for both and see who gets the best and who's. I have a sneaky suspicion who will get the most worst parents votes, but alas. Charlotte, are we putting people together? Are we like putting Charlotte and Peter together? Or are they technically?
We can couple people up, sure, if we want. Yeah.
Because I'm going to put Alexander and Regina. I'm going to put Charlotte and Peter. Katarina and Ulrich are probably separate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess they are both the parent. No, they're.
If we're pairing them, I think we have to pair them. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then Aegon gets Doris. Claudia's all by herself. Any other parents?
Technically, he could also have Hannah, though, right?
I know.
Yeah. It's
tricky. We never meet that. Oh, that's Silja.
That's right? Silja, yeah.
All right. Anybody else? Alexander, Regina, Claudia, Aegon and Doris slash Hannah. Hannah on her own. Charlotte and Peter. Katarina and Ulrich.
Well, should Hannah be on her own, or do we have to add Michael?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
Because now, full disclosure, like I lobbied for this category just so we can like vote Hannah the worst at something again. So I'm excited for that. And maybe Alexander or Regina will get some flowers.
The worst.
I feel like we have to be missing parents, but am I just wrong?
I don't know.
Helge is technically a parent.
Yeah.
Just going to ask, where is my child? What year?
Okay. And then this one I thought was very fun. What is the best time travel device? So we have the chair, the passage, the floating orb, what are we calling the cool orb?
We called the floating orb the anomaly at one point. I don't know if you want to do that for the anomaly and the orb and then the apparatus.
Oh, yeah, like the golden snitch looking one?
Yeah.
The golden one. Are there any? We have to be missing the chair. The past
Golden Globe. That's the real Golden Globe.
Okay, I'll put it. The chair that passes the anomaly, the apparatus. I'm missing. Oh, the
chair like, is in the, like the season one Noah chair, right?
The time machine. I'm gonna the Noah chair. Yeah.
Oh, the Tan House OG machine. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the time machine. Capital letters.
I think it's. I think anything else kind of fits with like.
Really, a time space machine, but whatever.
Okay.
Sorry. It opens up a pocket thing, so it's
all right. Any other categories you'd like to add? In this, in our Wendy's award,
just like some, there was an honorable mention, best use of a raisin. And I could only come up with one option, which was Adam's face. that was one I thought of. Like that's just a personal.
He heard it through the grapevine, Ariel.
So Ariel award. Yes, it was the grapevine. It was very old.
So I am going to add that. I'm going to make it a required category, and the only option is Adam's face. Does that work for you? There's no other. You can't put in another. Well, if someone has an idea for another, I'll give them another.
Is there a competing? What would we call the award of like best use of someone's name when they're not there, but it's literally just people quote saying Mikkel and Marta?
Most powerful name award. I think Marta probably wins though, you know. Jonas.
Yeah,
Mikkel.
They sprinkle in a Mikkel when they don't quite have him.
Marta.
Say Mikkel. Say Mikkel.
Marta. It's most powerful name award. Yep.
All right. Well, I'll put in so most expressive use of someone else's name.
And this then I just may have, be yeah. very ignoble of me, but can we call the best deaf category? We don't have a name for that yet.
Yeah,
right?
No, we don't.
But
do
we just name the whole category kaput?
Kaput. Okay. I like that the name makes sense that the Stoners often use. So I'll do the Kaput Award for Excellence in Death.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Amazing. I think that's probably good. We'll be back next week to announce the winner. So make sure you vote. It's in the show notes below. Make sure you vote for all of these awards, and we'll announce them next week. And then we'll announce what our plans are moving forward. Where we're gonna travel to next as the Travelers.
Is Hannah gonna find a way to cheat for these awards for the voting?
Always.
Definitely.
God damn it, Hannah.
Any final thoughts, Rich, as we'll have one more episode to talk about Dark through the lens of award winners, but
this has been an absolute delight. Really like amongst the, I think best podcast that I've done here, PSR. And yeah, I hurt my back and I'm a little delirious today. So take me with many grains of salt. That's my parting thoughts.
I can't believe your estranged daughter came, wanted you to move in with her, and she pushed you into the
I know the cabin. That witch.
But you survived.
White devil. You
what a twist.
White devil.
What a twist. She thought she had ended you, but really you were just getting started.
Ariel, what about you?
This was real. This was love. As a misguided Carrie played by Claire Danes at the end of Homeland Season 2 said, this was love. this was real. And that's all I have to say. If you care about the show, then I care about you, as far as I'm concerned.
So sweet. Yeah, same.
That may have been the singular straw that broke my camel's back and got me to watch Homeland, Ariel. I just want you to know. I'm like so curious right now.
All right. Well, Rich, before we return next week at the Wendy's, what else you got going on and where can people find you?
Oh, a bunch of stuff. Twitch.tv/DM Philly. I'll be back over there streaming D&D eventually. I'm talking about Good Omens with you and Taylor Ballgrace. I'm talking about Foundation with you and Austin Smith. We're getting ready to talk about Ahsoka, the series premiering on Disney Plus at the end of August. The road to Ahsoka is just finished up with our Rebels rewatch. And the Wheel of Time turns a Windrose in the halls of post-show recaps. Keep your ears open for Wheel of Time coverage coming soon to you.
Ariel, what about you?
Wow. I am, what year is it? I am covering the After Party with you and Jess, covering movies with you, Grace. That's always fun. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then we're a little bit into like a slow August, but we'll find something to talk about. And Yeah, I'm
Slowog, it's Gran Turismo is coming out.
But not till the end of the month, even though there's a million previews.
I know.
I am on X at that other Ariel.
Yeah, I got a lot going on right now, so just name a few that hasn't been mentioned. Winning Time. Did you mention the after party? We're doing the after party. Heels. Heartstopper came back. So I'm doing lots here on Post Show Recaps. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace or... and then other socials, Hi For Grace or Go For Grace. We will be back next week with the Windies. Make sure you vote. Your vote matters. You should do it in the show notes below.
Never believe anything else.
Never believe anything else. Until next time, ultimate fist bump.
Ultimate fist bump.